today. We are blessed by your presence here and worship with us today. Eugene Peterson said, find a small church and become a part of it because there you can have the greatest impact. So I thank you for being here and being a part of that impact. Will you join me now in prayer? Spirit of life, breath of God, wind of wonder, source of strength and wisdom, still speaking, still creating, still breathing. Light of life and holy fire, the spark and flame within. Heal the dryness of shame and despair, and flesh us with your love. Bring all the parts of us together. Open our minds to a new awareness. Open our hearts to love and a new sensitivity to your touch and your breath, kindling and feeding and giving life to the flame within. And grant us an awareness of your presence with us now, moving in us, around us, and through us. In your many holy names we pray. Amen. One of the things that I wanted to do with this MCC anniversary sermon series is to talk about some of our denomination's history and to reflect on the ways the stories of the denomination's origin and journey could resonate within our own lives. We chose red as a liturgical color for this period, red, the color of Pentecost, the movement of the Spirit, recalling that our founder was a Pentecostal minister, yes, but also that our denomination was very, very Spirit-formed, gathered together in a day when the very concept of being gay and a Christian, gay and religious, was inconceivable. It took a movement of the Spirit to make that happen. It is sometimes in the survival of the very hard events of our lives, the events that we never thought that we would make it through, that mark us forever. Sometimes it seems we either emerge with more experience in life or with less life in our experience. What is often most important in achieving the former, however, is to remember the moments with clarity and to honor the memory of our survival in light of truth, without guilt and without question. My own life was marked by a serious illness in my past. I had Guillain-Barré when I was 14. French polio, they call it. I was paralyzed. I spent over a month in the hospital and half a year learning how to pull myself back together again, how to feed myself, how to stand, how to rise, how to move, how to walk. I emerged from that experience marked and different, and not always in a good way. I no longer trusted my body. I became reckless and angry. A person of excess, always testing the limitation of my flesh and my bones. A body that had betrayed me in so many ways. A body that I no longer trusted and a God that I questioned. Yes, I don't know why, but it seems that sometimes religion and reality clash at such times. And one tries to explain the other in often bizarre, hurtful, hateful, and unhelpful ways. Why would God do this? For the longest time, I felt that my sickness was a punishment from God for the way that I was made, for feeling inside like a woman, for wrestling with those feelings inside me day after day and always losing that match. I promised God for the umpteenth time I would straighten myself out. I would work hard to feel and live like a man. If only God would let me live. And then when I survived, well, I had to deal with the perceived consequences of that bargain. The whole experience wrecked me. It broke me emotionally, socially, and theologically into pieces. the faint echoes of which still resonate to this day in some of my behaviors. Reverend Jim Matulski spoke at the 2005 UFMCC conference in Calgary, Canada. Remember, he urged us, because until we remember fully, we can't fully move forward. He encouraged us to remember people with AIDS, even people whose names we don't know. He spoke of Gugu Gulami, an AIDS activist in South Africa who was stoned to death in 1998 because she declared her HIV positive status openly. They said they picked her off because she stood up alone. So a large group of citizens all started wearing HIV-positive shirts. People who were HIV-positive and negative wearing those T-shirts together, standing up and for and with each other, connected together, pulled together. Jim also talked about how gay men of a certain age are a much smaller group now. There's a hole in that generation in our community, an absence of people. That is one of the things we don't talk about, he said, and we need to. Then he asked all the women in the room to stand, and he said, "You did not have to stand with us through this," he began, "and because we men have not always stood with you in the ways that you have stood with us. We are grateful to you, and we will translate that gratitude into action, into standing with you on behalf of women's issues." During that conference, my first as an ordained minister, MCC held a recommitment ceremony for persons living with HIV and AIDS, and we marched 500 strong in the streets of Canada, all of us wearing HIV-positive T-shirts. I still have that T-shirt, and I will never forget that memory. There are indeed times in life when we feel exasperated, at the end of our hope, lost, lonely, hurt, our trust in God broken, our trust in humanity broken, our trust in ourself broken, our trust in these bodies in which we live, flesh and bone broken, any or all of the above. My cousin, Alan Rogers, died in the early wave of AIDS. It was hard to get a funeral home to handle the body then. It was hard to even have the funeral. The stigma hung so heavy as something that we didn't even talk about. Shame on us. My father and Alan were quite close, and I remember my father saying at that time, "Alan didn't die that way. He was a good boy." Wow, did that ever catch in my head and stick like a dead fly to flypaper. It took me years to get rid of that, along with a heart-to-heart conversation with my father, one in which we all found healing. By God's grace. We have to remember, tell truth, and in that comes healing. And most of all, we have to look for hope. Hope in the midst of brokenness. We have to preach hope in the midst of a fractured community, a world in pieces. And I think Ezekiel kind of helps us with that in a way. Ezekiel, mystical Ezekiel, son of Buzi or Buzi, poet, prophet. He may have even been known by different names in different religious traditions. And in some legends, he is even said to have been a teacher to Pythagoras. He is certainly known for his colorful and memorable visions, all liberally sprinkled with mystical imagery. Ezekiel saw a wheel way up in the middle of the air. Yes, he's the one that saw a wheel within a wheel in the sky. A prophet of puzzling visions, all of which have been interpreted in a whole host of ways And he is the one with the vision of the valley of dry bones. Some have said Ezekiel was prophesying resurrection, but he was prophesying instead the return to life from the Babylonian exile, the place from which the Israelites needed to emerge, needed to come back from, back to life in Israel, when all hope had been lost, when all had been lost, and they needed hope that it would happen. Ezekiel was prophesying the resurrection of a whole people. Pull yourselves together, people. A group of people with specific beliefs who had been conquered, defeated, cast out, exiled, on the verge of being lost. Prophets are called to be stubborn, to keep on going even when everyone else has given up, when everyone else has turned away and left the field. The image of a prophet preaching to dry bones is one that many a preacher has pondered in their most private moments, especially in this day and age. I talk to my colleagues. We sometimes think, are we just talking to ourselves here? In a field of what remains after a battle long ago, looking out over the bones of empty pews. Am I making a difference here? Can anyone even hear me? Oh God, you know. You know. Pastors, prophets, churches, denominations down through the ages have found hope in Ezekiel's words. In Ezekiel's response to God's question, can these bones live? Oh God, you know. You know, because sometimes in our heart of hearts, we do not know. But we have to keep going. For when we lose hope, we have lost everything. When we lose hope in life, we have lost it all. The wicked, dry defeat of despair decomposes our very being. Takes us apart piece by piece, leaving nothing behind but dry dust. That is the place Ezekiel was facing, looking out over a field of dry bones, remains, forgotten memories, the soul of his people. We have to be faithful to the task that we are called to, even though at times it may seem hopeless, like so many dried parts scattered to the four winds. For in our persistence, we become hope embodied. We become hope enfleshed, the instrument of resurrection and life. A wise soul once said, act boldly and mighty forces will come to your aid. Things will come together in surprising ways. But it takes our hope and our perseverance to make that happen. To keep going when all seems lost. It is indeed not whether you win or lose, but how long you play the game. How long you stay at it. A people's way of life and beliefs will survive defeat and exile if the prophet speaks, gives breath to the words of hope, encouragement, bringing dead things together in life. Once more, the resurrection of a people, a way of life, the way of love. For it is in fidelity to the task, continuing to work, continuing to comfort, continuing to care, continuing to preach in the midst of dry bones that will bring them together, that will bring people together and build a community and rebuild. The prophet teaches us that you have to keep speaking. Even though you think none may hear. Even though you see none before you to hear. For in continuing to do so, to follow the call of your heart to the task at hand, then those to hear are created and assembled and put together in front of you. pulled together by persistence, enfleshed by hope, given life with breath. For it is in the fidelity of the prophet and prophetic action that calls the people together. There's so much more going on than we can see. Spirit teaches us that. The wind that moves around and about us. And I don't know about y'all, but it howled around our house last night. It's hard to get an illustration better than that. The wind, unseen yet ever present, moving in mystery. We see the way it moves, but we don't see it. Calling us up and out from the graves of our despair. Leading us to grow up and out of our past. Our own hurts and our own woundedness, the things that just broke us apart and left us in pieces. In my own moments of despair, I can hear the voice of Ezekiel calling to me down through the ages. Pull yourself together, Emma. Pull the pieces together. And so Ezekiel then saw before him the vision of a vast multitude, filled with breath, spirit, and life, risen on their feet, standing before him. A vision of hope. Just as Jim Matulski concludes with his own vision of hope. Imagine Ezekiel's joy, he says, at seeing the defeated army standing bravely at attention, filling the valley where they had once been defeated. Picture our own communities, our own people, standing tall and proud, dancing in the sunlight on Castro Street, on 125th Street, on Santa Monica Boulevard, in living rooms and dining rooms and kitchens and bedrooms, on front porches and backyards, on the beach, on the farm, rooms and spaces and places, everywhere known and unknown where our people live, a vision of hope. And that is enough to pull us together, to bring life into our bones. During the AIDS pandemic, MCC was present, alive, prophetic, providing death with dignity and hope of life, acting up against a nation that counted our dead, but failed to acknowledge our love and our relationships, our very connectedness. This is a part of the journey of MCC, preaching when it seems that no one is listening. Persistence in the face of motionless apathy and atrophy. Hope in the valley of bones. It is hope in the valley of bones. This is a part of our history and our journey, a part of our story. Let us always remember that in our own lives and in our own days moving forward. So may it be.